taking all of the learnings that the Trump administration garnered from its anti-trans policies, where it learned how to weaponize the government against a group of people in healthcare, in the military, in education, attempted in housing, and essentially then took those learnings and then applied them to Project 2025. As a matter of fact, one of the key architects of Trump's anti-trans policies, Roger Severino, is one of the key people who drafted and wrote Project 2025. And to close the loop, he and other people were at the Heritage Foundation, came into the Trump administration with these policies, and are now carrying them through, applying them to many people through Project 2025.
Well, we want to thank you for being with us. Also, this is a case we'll look at in the coming days. The Supreme Court will soon hear a landmark legal challenge brought by the ACLU against a ban on hormone therapies for transgender youth. It'll be argued by Chase Strangio, making Chase Strangio the first openly transgender lawyer to argue before the Supreme Court. Amara Jones, thanks so much for being with us. Founder and CEO of Translash Media, host of its investigative podcast, The Anti-Trans Hate Machine. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You are tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Tune in to KBOO on October 31st for two thrilling Halloween marathons. We've got a great lineup of nine different DJs spinning their favorite haunting tracks. Get the eerie vibe started early with part one of our spooky marathon, Hallow's Dawn from midnight to 7 a.m. And as the sun sets, don't miss part two of our chilling soundtrack, Hallow's Twilight, from 7 p.m. to midnight. That's KBOO's Part 2 Marathon, Hallow's Dawn and Hallow's Twilight, from 12 to 7 and 7 to 12 on your favorite spooky station, KBOO. Check out our other upcoming Halloween specials and seasonal merch at kboo.fm/Halloween.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, two Oregon and Washington counties haven't received their ballots.
Oregon government leaders urge Oregonians to stay calm after the election.
And in international news, Spain experiences deadly flash floods.
Good evening. This is KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, October 30th, 2024. I'm Danny Shy.
And I'm Eliza Yurkov. If you live in Coos County in Oregon and haven't received your ballot yet, you are not alone. Julie Breck, the Coos County clerk, reported that an unspecified error at the Postal Service has delayed the delivery of ballots to an unknown number of county residents. The number of missing ballots is unclear because officials know if a ballot is missing only when the voter tells them. Coos County has about 50,000 registered voters. Breck wrote in a press release, quote, "At this point, voters who haven't received a ballot shouldn't count on it arriving," end quote. Eligible voters without a ballot should call the county clerk's office at 541-396-7610 or visit the office in Coquille. Breck's office and the Oregon Secretary of State have requested a public statement from the Postal Service explaining that the delays were purely a mailing issue. Voters in Whitman County and Washington State also haven't received their ballots. Sandy Jameson, the county auditor, said up to 300 ballots were not delivered. She verified that a third-party vendor delivered about 24,000 ballots to the post office on October 16th, and the post office marked them as all received, including the missing ones. Both Jameson and Breck blame the United States Postal Service for these errors. Officials encourage voters to contact the clerk's offices to get replacement ballots as soon as possible. Every ballot postmarked on or before November 5th will be counted.
Portland leaders and civic groups are urging local citizens to remain calm despite Donald Trump's warnings that he will not accept the election results if they are not in his favor. They're calling upon Portlanders to avoid destructive protest following the 2024 election. The Portland Metro Chamber, Governor Tina Kotek, both of Oregon's U.S. senators, and a number of county and local leaders released a letter decrying political violence yesterday. The letter encourages, quote, respectful civic participation during this election season, end quote. It says while they respect and support the right to protest, they ask the demonstrators to do so without causing damage to the community. The letter says, quote, we have seen encouraging signs of progress as we address the city's challenges. As we navigate this election period, let us safeguard and advance our hard-won but still fragile progress, ensuring our actions strengthen rather than undermine our community's growth, end quote. Just this week, ballot boxes in Portland and Vancouver were set on fire. And in 2021, a planned Portland rally by the far right resulted in violent clashes between the Proud Boys and anti-fascist groups. Almost everyone who signed the letter is a Democrat. Tootie Smith, a Republican running for re-election as the Clackamas County Chair, did join the signers.
Parts of Spain received a month's rainfall in 24 hours, resulting in flash floods and at least 95 deaths. The country's deadliest floods in three decades trapped people in their homes, brought down trees, and cut off roads and railway lines. Officials urge people to stay in their homes as more rain is expected today. The intense rain has been attributed to a phenomenon known as the gota fría, or cold drop, which occurs when cold air moves over the warm waters of the Mediterranean Sea. Spain, along with Portugal, Italy, and Greece, is already enduring the harsh reality of what climate scientists call compound hazards and cascading impacts. Recent droughts in Spain have hardened the soil, increasing the amount of runoff when heavy rains come.
Authorities have released details on the man suspected of setting three ballot boxes on fire in Oregon and Southwest Washington. Surveillance images show a black or dark blue Volvo S60 pulling up to a drop box in Portland just before security detail noticed the fire. The fire suppression system did not work at the drop box in Vancouver the way it did in Portland, resulting in hundreds of scorched ballots. A third ballot box fire on October 8th in Vancouver did not damage any ballots. Similarly constructed incendiary devices with the words Free Gaza and Free Palestine connect all three fires. Authorities say the suspect is most likely an expert metal worker because of the way the devices were made and attached to the boxes. They are unsure if the suspect actually has pro-Palestinian views or is using the messages to create confusion. The man appears to be white, between the ages of 30 and 40, and balding or has short hair, according to the surveillance footage. The Volvo does not have a front license plate, but does have a rear plate with unknown numbers or letters. Voters are encouraged to drop off ballots between 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. Greg Kinsey, the elected auditor for Clark County, also encourages voters to contact his office for a replacement ballot and to check the status of their ballots at www.votewa.gov.
Former President Donald Trump has scheduled a campaign rally in Albuquerque tomorrow, October 31st. Many are curious why he's visiting a traditionally Democratic state so late in the race. New Mexico voters have chosen a Republican as president only once in the past eight elections, and New Mexico was one of seven states caught in Trump's fake elector scheme in 2020. With details on that story, it's Roz Brown.
Many voters in New Mexico are wondering why former President Donald Trump plans a Thursday visit to this state, where polls show a firm Democratic lead. It's only Trump's second visit since 2019, when he departed with an unpaid bill for an Albuquerque event exceeding $200,000. Election watchdog David Becker says he has no idea why Trump plans to visit Albuquerque again, but he notes some candidates act like they're going to win, while others act like they might be losing.
When, as is highly likely, Donald Trump declares victory on Tuesday night, listen carefully to what he says, when he says it, how he says it. Because if he claims there's widespread fraud and talks about non-citizen voting, it's likely he thinks he's losing.
A poll this week by the Albuquerque Journal shows Vice President Kamala Harris has a significant advantage over Trump in the state. Roughly 50% of registered voters told the newspaper they plan to vote or have already voted for Harris, while 41% said they were voting for Trump. Information on how to cast a ballot is online at vote411.org. Becker calls the recent firebombing of ballot drop boxes in Washington and Oregon horrific and not something we're used to seeing in the U.S. He has advice for those who have not returned their mail ballots.
I would advise at this point, anyone who's holding on to a mail ballot and intends to cast their mail ballot should return it directly to election officials, either through a drop box or directly at election office or at a polling place. I would advise not to put it in the U.S. mail.
Law enforcement officials say hundreds of ballots may have been destroyed in Washington, while a fire suppressant protected most of the ballots in Portland, Oregon. New Mexico was one of several states in 2020 where Republican electors attempted to cast ballots indicating Donald Trump had won, a scheme that eventually resulted in criminal charges against Trump and his associates. This is Roz Brown, New Mexico News Connection. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York.
Harris makes a closing argument. Republicans continue to distance themselves from racist comments at Trump's Madison Square Garden rally. And election experts say they expect misinformation after Election Day. With more on the story, it's Catherine Carley with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Donald Trump has spent a decade trying to keep the American people divided and afraid of each other. That is who he is. But America, I am here tonight to say that is not who we are.
Vice President Kamala Harris says this election is a choice between a country rooted in freedom for all or one ruled by chaos and division. Speaking near the White House, where former President Donald Trump helped incite the January 6th riot, Harris said Trump is seeking unchecked power. Republicans continue to disavow racist and vulgar comments made at Trump's Madison Square Garden rally. His running mate J.D. Vance says he didn't hear Puerto Rico called a floating island of garbage, but he says it's just a joke and he's over it.
We're not going to restore the greatness of American civilization if we get offended at every little thing. Let's have a sense of humor and let's have a little fun.
One speaker called Harris the Antichrist, while another mocked her biracial heritage. New York progressive Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's family is from Puerto Rico. She calls the campaign event a full-blown hate rally and says demonizing the victims makes post-election violence easier.
These are mini Stop the Steal rallies. These are rallies to prime an electorate into rejecting the results of an election if it doesn't go the way that they want.
Trump has since called Sunday's event a love fest and rejected comparisons to an infamous 1939 pro-Nazi rally there. He accuses Harris of running a hate campaign. Trump advisor Steve Bannon is out of prison after serving 4 months for refusing to testify to Congress about January 6th. He says if vote totals on Election Day look similar to 2020, Trump should again declare himself the winner.
We're not prepared to have, in the dark of night, all the problems that happened last time. The 2020 election was stolen.
Election officials continue to emphasize the integrity of voting and warn about misinformation. David Becker from the Center for Election Innovation predicts falsehoods will flourish after Tuesday, driven by who wins, not real vote fraud.
I looked it up. It's literally more likely that you'd get hit by lightning in Ohio than find a non-citizen voting there.
A federal judge in Pennsylvania has thrown out a Republican lawsuit aiming to block overseas voting. The suit argues state officials overstepped when exempting overseas voters from ID requirements. Pennsylvania Democratic Congresswoman Chrissy Houlihan says they're threatening the voting rights of military personnel.
And if I were active duty at this point in time and serving overseas, or the family member of somebody serving overseas stationed abroad with them, I would be apoplectic.
And the U.S. Supreme Court won't let Robert F. Kennedy Jr. pull his name from ballots in the battlegrounds of Michigan and Wisconsin. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an interview with Oregon State Treasurer and Secretary of State candidate Tobias Reed. At 6, it's Exploration with Michio Kaku. Then at 7, it's For the Wild. Tonight's weather is rainy and cold with a low of 46 degrees. Tomorrow's weather is cold and rainy with a high of 49 degrees. Today in history, George Foreman got pressed out before he started pressing sandwiches in 1974. Muhammad Ali knocked out Foreman in the eighth round of the Rumble in the Jungle making him the heavyweight world champion for the second time. The quote of the day is from American writer and radio producer Orson Welles, who shocked the country with the War of the Worlds broadcast 86 years ago today. The too realistic Halloween prank scared listeners, and might scare you too. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the most terrifying thing I have ever witnessed. Wait a minute, someone's crawling out of the hollow top. Someone or something I can see peering out of that black hole, two luminous disks. Are they eyes? It might be a face. It might be...
The Angoon community has been asking for an apology from federal government for a devastating attack in 1882, and they finally received one. And a group of Californians are in Colombia this week for the 16th United Nations Conference on Biological Diversity. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. On October 26, 1882, the U.S. Navy bombarded the Tlingit village of Angoon, Alaska, destroying clan houses, food caches, 40 canoes, and leaving the community for dead. But the community did not die, and for decades, they've been asking for an apology from the federal government. This past weekend, close to a century and a half later, they finally got one. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry was there and has this story.
142 years ago, Angoon went up in flames. Ha'ashkuke Ka Yanasach Barbara Cariente Nelson's grandmother survived the bombardment as a young woman.
Can you imagine my grandmother at 26 having to scramble and run with her family? And the fear, the real fear.
Six children were killed in the shelling, and an unknown number of others died in the following months from exposure and starvation. Though it's a long time coming, Cariente Nelson said many in the community have mixed emotions about the apology.
How do you restore a human being? How do you restore a family? How do you restore a community who have been the target of annihilation?
On Saturday, Tlingit people from all over Southeast Alaska and beyond gathered in the Angoon High School gym to receive the apology. They danced wearing regalia. U.S. Navy Rear Admiral Mark Sicato presented the apology to hundreds in the room and thousands watching on a live stream.
The United States Navy apologizes on behalf of the United States Navy to all the Tlingit peoples of Angoon for the pain, suffering, and generational trauma inflicted by the bombardment of their village. Acknowledges that the Tlingit people of Angoon did not deserve nor provoke the bombardment and subsequent destruction of their village by United States naval forces.
Shkendu Ton George grew up with this story, and as a teacher, she would teach her students about the shelling and burning of their village. And George said she's excited to teach this part of the history now, too.
It doesn't matter how many times I talk about it, how many times I talk with students about what happened. Like, every time I tear up, it's going to be amazing to be able to say the right thing happened, you know, finally.
Reporting from Angoon, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
A group of Californians are in Colombia this week for the 16th United Nations Conference on Biological Diversity. Tribes, policymakers, and conservation groups are advocating for national monument status for three sites in the Golden State. Lena Ortega with the Fort Yuma Quitzon Tribe wants federal protection for the proposed Quitzon National Monument in Imperial County.
The movement to save the environment isn't a choice for us. It's a matter of survival. And our paths, healing, are intertwined with that of Mother Earth. We are the land. The land is us.
Brandy McDaniels with the Pitt River Nation says time is running out for the administration to declare the Satitla National Monument in northeastern California.
With less than 3 months left in President Biden's term, now is the time for the president to use his authority by designating Satitla as a national monument for all future generations.
Tribes are also calling for a new Chuckwalla National Monument in Southern California, near Joshua Tree National Park. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
After a strongly negative response from the media, the Sherwood Police Department has decided to cancel their Hide and Seek with a Cop event. According to Sherwood Police Public Information Officer Paul Mattson, the department, quote, likes to do community building events with a twist, end quote. And in this case, the twist was having armed and uniformed police officers trying to tag teenagers and adults as they ran through Stella Olson Park at night. The event was originally scheduled for this evening, but after the event was posted on Facebook last week, the negative comments started to roll in. One commentator said, quote, I call it hide and seek, but they call it resisting arrest, end quote. While another said, quote, I'd go, but I like breathing, end quote. In a statement, Sherwood Police said, quote, recent media coverage has reshaped the perception of the event, causing concerns about safety, end quote. The statement went on to say, quote, our team is actively exploring new ideas for future events that will bring us together safely and supportively, end quote.
A 6.0 magnitude earthquake hit 175 miles off the Oregon coast today in near Bandon. This is the third largest earthquake to hit the region in the last 10 years. The Pacific Northwest lies on the Cascadia subduction zone, a 600-mile fault line that is capable of producing a 9.0 or higher earthquake. Oregon and Washington have been pouring money into seismic upgrades over the region to prepare for the event. This includes the Interstate Bridge Replacement Project that the states have been collaborating on to ensure the bridge that connects Oregon and Washington will be safe during the earthquake. Andrew Michael from the United States Geological Survey said the earthquake happened at the Blanco Fracture Zone on the Juan de Fuca and Pacific Plates. This area has been quite active over the last 10 years, with 10 recorded earthquakes above a 5.5 magnitude. Today's earthquake was far enough off the coast that it did not cause any damage or land or pose tsunami danger.
The wildfires may have ended, but their financial impact is lasting. The Oregon Department of Forestry asked the Oregon State Treasury for a $60 million loan on October 10th to tide them over until December. The 1.5 million acres of wildfires this summer cost ODF $317 million in firefighting fees and contracts. Federal agencies will reimburse ODF $175 million, but that leaves the department with $133 million in uncompensated costs. That makes this year the largest acreage burned by wildfires and the highest amount of uncompensated costs ODF has seen. Last year, the net cost for the wildfires was just $34 million. The funding structure for managing wildfires has not changed much in the last decades, despite wildfire acreage and costs increasing dramatically. ODF has asked for loans almost every year to cover those costs since 2002. The legislature will eventually cover those costs, but they don't meet until December. ODF needs to resolve unpaid bills for contractors, hence the loan request. As the swath of wildfires and their damage increase due to climate change, so will their financial impact. ODF lawmakers and the state fire marshal are working on more robust financial models to tackle future wildfire seasons more sustainably.
New Yorkers are still facing misinformation about electric vehicles, particularly about how they work in the cold. These claims have been proven false, but they still reinforce misconceptions that people have, preventing more of them from being on the road. Edwin J. Vieira shares details.
Despite their growing popularity, consumers in New York and nationwide still face misconceptions about electric vehicles. EV advocates say most of them aren't true. One of the most pervasive is about colder climates reducing battery efficiency, which many energy and environmental agencies have resoundingly found false. Given EVs' evolution since they first hit the road, Kate Kruk with the New York Capital EVA says people can benefit from EVs any time of the year.
Most modern EVs have such advanced battery management systems, it kind of minimizes that impact. And you can use features that a lot of electric vehicles have called preconditioning, which can ready your car so that the car is already warm when you're ready to go, so it doesn't reduce that range as much.
From Kruk's own experience as a longtime EV driver and upstate New Yorker, she feels an EV is better equipped to tackle the region's snowy winters. This is because an EV's battery runs across the bottom of its chassis, making for better weight distribution on slippery roads. With a gas-powered car, most of the weight is in the front with the engine, which can make it harder to control on the snow and ice. Aside from driving capabilities, EVs pose many cost, health, and safety benefits for consumers. Though this has translated into increasing consideration to buy an EV, there's still some reluctance to purchase one. Crux says the biggest challenge is in a driver's mind, given so many have only traveled in fossil fuel-powered vehicles.
Once we get over that general kind of anxiety, it can play out, and hopefully we can start to be a little bit more open to different ideas. Something, again, only knowing or only coming from a background of driving in a fossil fuel vehicle, range anxiety is very real, and it becomes a challenge to get people over that hump.
But the election could test the country's love of EVs. Former President Donald Trump claims Vice President Kamala Harris will implement an EV mandate to cripple the auto industry, though that claim is false. Crux says no matter the election's outcome, there won't be too much of a change in the country's adoption of EVs.
The ship has sailed, and I think we're ready to move forward, especially knowing that the United States can be and should be a leader in e-mobility and technology.
This is Edwin J. Vieira for New York News Connection.
Other parts of the United States are also suffering from the circulation of EV misinformation. EV advocates in Michigan are aiming to restore people's faith in their manufacturing. Crystal Blair reports.
Advocates of electric vehicles are countering what they call misleading claims about the impact of EV production in Michigan. Critics of electric vehicles argue that prioritizing EV production could harm traditional auto manufacturing jobs and say the focus should be on safeguarding these roles and strengthening U.S. control within the auto industry. However, David Kiva with Environmental Defense Fund Action says EV policies have already generated billions in investments and promised to create more high-paying jobs in Michigan.
I think one of the things that we've been particularly focused on is the GM Lansing Grand River plant. These aren't jobs that might come at some point in the future. These are current jobs that are here right now.
Opponents of the electric vehicle trend also warn that more EV projects risk making the Great Lakes state reliant on foreign investments tied to China, raising both economic and security issues. Kiva emphasizes that Michigan, known for putting the world on wheels, shouldn't view EV production as a lost cause just because China already has a head start. He calls that view defeatist, among other things.
And it sells short Michigan auto workers' ability to compete against the rest of the world, including against China.
He also points out that traditional vehicle pollution affects lower income and minority communities the most, giving them the most to gain from EVs in terms of cleaner air and reduced health and vehicle maintenance costs. Michigan has about 43,000 registered EVs on the road, fewer than the 60,000 originally projected by this time by state officials. For the Michigan News Connection, I'm Crystal Blair.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael would rather have a landslide than a firestorm.
While electoral chaos has been smoldering for months with threats against election officials and voters by those who already know the system is corrupt because they know Trump will lose, someone set ballot drop boxes on fire here in Portland and Vancouver. As former coach Bill Belichick said, if you're not cheating, you're not trying hard enough. Trump said earlier that after he's re-elected, we won't have to worry about voting again. I didn't worry till now. This Sunday, thousands of haters and hate curious came to Madison Square Garden to be fired up by racism, sexism, etc. They didn't chant Sig Heil, but lock her up. Maybe the big one we should worry about isn't an earthquake years away, but a sundering of democracy next week. Maybe a Harris landslide can quell the nascent rumblings and sparks. So join and increase the landslide. Vote. Tell your neighbors to vote. Tell your friends and relatives in other states, battleground or not, to vote. All we are saying is give votes a chance. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, October 30th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Dan Raphael, Josh Salem, Eliza Yurkov, Ray Bodwell, and Harper Mahood. The producer is Eliza Yurkov, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Crystal Blair, Edwin J. Vieira, Catherine Carley, Antonia Gonzalez, and Roz Brown. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eliza Yurkov.
And I'm Danny Shy. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for news in depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. My name is Harper Mahood, and I recently had the opportunity to speak with Tobias Reed, the current Oregon State Treasurer and Democratic candidate in the race for Secretary of State. Reed was elected as treasurer in 2017 and previously represented Beaverton in the State House, where he served as House Majority Whip. We discuss the responsibilities of Oregon Secretary of State, Treasurer Reed's qualifications for the role, and much more. I'd just like to have you start with introducing yourself.
I'm Tobias Reed. I'm a state treasurer and candidate for Secretary of State.
You have been the state's treasurer since 2017, so you've witnessed a lot. You've seen pandemic, 2020 protests, and Oregon wildfires. How do you think that all